Well, Bonzo was the best hard rock drummer ever, hands down. I mean, no one comes within a mile of him.
Bonzo was the main part of the band. He was the man who made whatever Page and I wrote basically work.
Nobody played the drums like John Bonham, and that's all there is to it.
I was stunned. Everybody was just stunned.
He was one of the greatest drummers of all time. I mean, he made that band, if you really think about it. He played lead drums, dude.
They were the first band to blow us off the stage. Led Zeppelin.
He was Bonzo on the road with Zeppelin, the wild man that would completely demolish John Paul Jones' room with a samurai sword. He was always dad.
Hello and welcome. This is The Rock Podcast, the only podcast that matters. Now, I collect stories. My name is Denny Somach. I'm your host, and each episode I'm going to bring you the inside story from my archives of rock. These are taken from the years and years of producing radio shows and hosting radio specials and all sorts of stuff. I built up this archive over the years. So you're going to be hearing some of the best things from that. And we're going to be having guests on from time to time, but more about that later. This is our debut show. And let me introduce Anita. Where are you?
Right here, Denny. Oh. You're looking right at me. Oh, okay. This is me. How you doing?
Okay. How's everything with you?
Great. You know, I love that we're on a first name basis. As you know, from the tri-state area, Philadelphia, Jersey, and a little bit of Delaware, I was known as Ask Anita, and I'm so happy that you asked Anita to be part of this. I'm really looking forward to it. So thank you. And yeah, just call me Anita. Well, as you know, Denny, music to me is life itself, and I have vivid memories of hearing the first Led Zeppelin album for the first time. It was in my friend Two and All Tony's apartment. It was 1969.
Okay.
And you know, the 70s are my favorite decade. The music right. And the recreational drugs, I know you agree.
I absolutely agree, and I remember the first time I heard Led Zeppelin. It was January of 69. I was in Florida visiting my grandmother, and I was listening to, believe it or not, an AM radio station, WSRF in Fort Lauderdale.
Surf.
Right.
K-Surf.
And it was W-Surf then.
That's right. East Coast.
And I heard, you know, the guy puts his new band from England, and it's their first album. They're called Led Zeppelin, and he puts on Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, and I just went, oh my God, what was that? And then he played like a couple more songs, and I was like, I can't believe it. This is amazing. Anyway, the reason we're talking about all this, obviously, we're going to do a little tribute here to John Bonham, because a few months ago was the 40th anniversary of his passing, and he's still considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rock drummer of all time. And we're just going to, you know, hopefully invoke some memories for you. I've been collecting these John Bonham stories. So this gives us a chance to go through that. So that's the first time you heard them. I told you the first time I heard them. How about the first time you heard this?
John Bonham, the drummer for Led Zeppelin, is dead at the age of 32. And as Inspector Ed Garland of the Thames Valley Police in England tells us,
we do not know the cause of death. There will be a post-mortem in due course. Although we're not treating it as suspicious.
Bonham was found lying in bed by John Paul Jones after a night's sleep at Jimmy Page's home following a late-night rehearsal. As the inspector says, John Bonham's death is not suspicious. The police reporting it was not a suicide, that there was no note found next to the body and no sign of any drugs nearby. Friends tell us that Bonham was in pretty good health, though Led Zepp's recent European tour did have one show canceled because Bonham was physically exhausted. Of course, the big question now is what happens to Led Zeppelin's North American tour that was set to begin October 17th in Montreal. A spokesman the source contacted at Swan Song Records said the tour has not been canceled, at least not yet, and that there won't be any further decision until the band's management meets tomorrow. Again, John Bonham of Led Zeppelin, dead at the age of 32.
Well, the actual cause of death was pulmonary aspiration, but they didn't go there then.
What's the modern day amount of, you know, version?
Well, it kind of sounded like the guy was inferring that perhaps John Bonham died of boredom. I don't know, you know. But all kidding aside, it is still very fresh for so many of us and such a great loss, including Jimmy Page, of course. Recently, he was asked about it, and he really gave a poignant answer. He told the interviewer that he found himself hearing the news, he found himself standing on a street corner, clutching 12 years of his life, not knowing which way to go. And he called the experience of John Bonham's death peculiar because he knew the dream was over and everything was gone.
Wow. How recent is that?
He said that like a week ago. I'm saying, you know, I mean, that's why it's just, you know, it's so.
He was probably commenting on the 40th anniversary.
Yes. And it's so long ago, but yet it's so right now.
Wow. Well, as you know, as I've said before, I collect Led Zeppelin stories, and I thought I'd go to my John Bonham folder and pull out a few of the stories that I found. So this first story is a great one. It's a great, the great Alice Cooper, who met John Bonham and Led Zeppelin on the very first American tour when the Alice Cooper band shared the bill with the Zeppelin at the famous Whiskey a Go-Go. So here's Alice to tell you the story.
I know I have a slide that somebody took that said Alice Cooper and Led Zeppelin this weekend only. And at the time, you know, we were just local bands as far as we were concerned. We didn't even know Led Zeppelin was, you know, who they were. It just was another band. We figured they were from the Valley or something, you know, until we got there. And of course, we saw Jimmy Page, and us being Yardbirds fans realized that, you know, he was in the Yardbirds, and that was a big deal to us. So we were immediately humbled by that because of the fact that here was a Yardbird, you know. Before that, you know, nobody had really heard of Jimmy Page. He might have played some lead with the Kinks and things like that, or on sessions, but honestly, nobody had ever heard of him. So we got there and they had British accents, which was kind of like a surprise to us. And, they were, you know, we just sort of like said, well, who goes on first? Doesn't matter to us. You know, we flipped a coin. I think we went on first the first night. They went on first the second night. But we really, you know, really got along. They were just a great band. I mean, as far as we were concerned, they were far, you know, a cut above a local band. That's for sure.
Alice Cooper with a great story. He's, you know, talking about playing with Led Zeppelin the first time they came to America. Alice is a big Keith Moon fan, by the way, and he confirms what always comes up when you're talking about Bonham, the comparisons between Bonham and Moon.
Bonham hit the drums hard. I don't think the Bonham hit the drums harder, though, than Buddy Miles or another drummer named Frosty from Lee Michaels. There was a couple of drummers that were just annihilated the drums. John was one of them. And he was a really good drummer. There's always going to be the controversy who was better, Bonham or Keith Moon. You know, well, you know, that's you know, what depends on whose corner you're in. I always thought Keith Moon was a more versatile drummer than John Bonham, but Bonham really hit the drums hard.
Well, that argument about which one is the better drummer, that'll go on and on till the end of time. I mean, I change my mind on a daily basis. But one thing, Denny, that we may be able to agree on, how about the best five rock drummers of all time? I made a list, and this was so easy for me, and I think this would be everybody's list.
Yeah.
Okay. John Bonham.
Yeah.
Keith Moon.
Yeah.
Ringo.
Yeah.
Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
Ginger Baker.
Okay, now I got to tell you, I was expecting the Mount Rushmore of rock, which is what most people do.
You can't.
The four.
Do four.
But you added a fifth, and I got to tell you something. I not only agree with the four that are on Mount Rushmore of rock, but I agree with your fifth choice.
Yeah, Ginger Baker has to be on there.
No question. And
has to be.
We have a show coming up on Cream, Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, Jack Bruce, with some amazing comments from
Ginger Baker. And I have a funny Ginger Baker story.
Okay, well, save it.
Oh, yeah. It's in the vault, Denny.
Okay, all right. That's Alice Cooper. Our next story is from Alex and Eddie Van Halen, and they're fans just like us, and they recall the first time they met John Bonham at an early point in their career, and it was at the famous Rainbow Bar and Grill. For those of you not familiar with the Rainbow, it's a bar and restaurant on the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood. The Rainbow was founded in early 72, opening, I think it was like April 16th, they had a party for Elton John there. I didn't go, I wasn't there, but it quickly became known as a hangout for rock stars, celebrities of all types, and it's legendary, filled with stories. We could probably do a whole episode on the place. What do you think?
Well, it's such a great hang because all of those clubs are right together there on Sunset. So, you know, you've got the Roxy down the street is the Whiskey. And then next to the Roxy, after you, you know, done drinking your weight, you go over there to the Rainbow and, you know, you eat there, drink some more. And everybody who performed at the Roxy and the Whiskey, they go there and everybody else goes there. So, yeah, it's one of the best hangs I ever. I was there first in 1980. A lot of mascara and big hair. And those were the guys.
When Van Halen was starting out, Eddie and Alex were in L.A., and just like everybody else, they went to the Rainbow, and that's where they ran into John Bonham. Now, remember, they weren't really known then. They were working on their first album. So Alex and Eddie, Alex mostly, here's the story.
Yeah, we were playing at Gazzari's, where it was one of the first places in Hollywood that we played. And on one of the breaks, I went over to the Rainbow, which is kind of a hangout for musicians and
when they're in town,
like, a lot of IMAs, you know, like I want to be, or I'm a model, I'm a I'm a dancer. So I seen this guy, he's pretty big, you know, actually for his whatever, he doesn't look that big on film or on anyway, to make a long story short, I wanted to walk up to him and said, "Hey John, how you doing? Good to meet you." And the guy had a cast on his arm to here, and I went like this to shake his hand, and the guy took a poke at me. Well, you know, I'm not quite as big. I'm just a little quicker than him. So he missed, and I said, then he had a bodyguard who was about...
came up to his waist.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
Or was he wasted? You
know, karate.
So anyway, that was my experience with Bonham. And it was a pleasure meeting him.
I'm glad that they mentioned Gazzari's because that was the other one. That was on the strip near Doheny.
Right.
It closed in 93, but very significant club. Jim Morrison played there before he was with the Doors. And Van Halen, they were the house band in the,
oh,
you
wow.
know, the late 70s, okay. All the way through. So, yeah, shout out to Gazzari's. That was great. So,
All right.
So now we have a conversation that you had with Simon Kirk. And I'd like to refer to it as a heart-to-heart.
Okay, heart to heart. All right, well, we all know Simon Kirk from his amazing work as a founding member of the band Free, as well as the supergroup Bad Company. In fact, I saw them not too long ago. They're still out there playing. They do 100 and some dates a year. Anyway, he has a very personal perspective to bring to our show. When I was doing my book, I have a Led Zeppelin book out.
Oh, it's a beautiful book, by the
way.
Thank you very much. It's like a coffee table book,
yeah.
But it's much more, you know, it's a beautiful book. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. So anyway, Simon gave me a great interview and he's in the book. And so this is from that conversation. He recalls the first time he met John Bonham, which it wasn't with Bad Company. He actually met him when he was 19 years old. He came to New York for the first time with the band Free, right when they released their big hit, All Right Now.
My very, very first memory of Bonzo was when Free came to New York, opening for Blind Faith, with four little kids. We were sat in this Irish bar on 8th and 48th. We just arrived. We were terrified because we'd been turned over by the customs in JFK. I mean, turned inside out because of our hair. So we were absolutely terrified. First time I'd seen a gun on a hip in the police. Anyway, so we're sitting there nursing our little Budweiser or whatever. And the barman comes over and he's got four pints of Guinness. And he puts them down on the table between us. He said, "That's from that guy over there." And it's Bonzo. And he goes, welcome to America, guys. And he didn't know us. Maybe he'd heard of us, but I think that's John Bonham. Wow. And, you know, and he got up and walked out. And that was the first time I'd ever met him.
Simon was actually the last person to play live with Bonham. It was on what turned out to be the final Led Zeppelin tour, which was the one they called the Tour Over Europe, 1980. And that tour ran from, June 17th to July 7th. The shows were performed in cities throughout Germany, as well as one each in Brussels, Rotterdam, Vienna, and Zurich. So I want to tell you before I play the story here that after Simon told me this story, I had to stop the interview so he could compose himself. I mean, he actually started to tear up. And, well, here it is. Listen.
I was at a loose end, and Bad Company had kind of gone on hiatus. So Peter called me up and said, listen, we're in Germany. Why don't you come and hang out with us for a few days? Come over from England. Oh, yeah, it's not a long, it's like an hour flight. So I went over to Frankfurt. They were playing there. And after the show, Bonzo came up to me out of the blue and said, hey, Kirky, would you like to play drums on Whole Lotta Love? I said, I'd love to. Because no one had ever played with them on stage other than
Ronnie Wood.
Ronnie, okay. And it was an honor. And I thought, oh, God. I said, John, I'd love to. Yes. Where do we rehearse? He says, in my bedroom in the hotel. What? I thought we'd have two drum kits or something in a studio. So I went up to his room, and he's got like two twin beds. And he sat on one bed, I'm sat on the other. We're facing each other, you know. And with our hands on our knees and thighs, he ran me through all the different time changes. He says, I start off. Da-da-da-da. I said, I know the beginning. Yeah. John, I have heard it a few times. He said, no, listen, pay attention. He was like a college professor. Pay attention, because after 3 minutes, I stop. Jimmy goes, dung-dang-dung-da-dung-da-dung-da-dung-da-dung-da-dung-da-dung. Anyway, we ran through all this, and the next night they announced me, and I went on, and they put another kit next to John's, and I'm getting quite emotional thinking about it, because really that was their last gig, and it was the last I ever saw John, because he died, you know, a couple of months later. And at the end, I'm sweating bullets, because I sweat when I play. That's just the way. And Bonzo's as cool as ice. He comes up. He says, that was, can I swear on this program? He said, that was fucking great. And that was the last I ever heard from him.
So Simon said that after he told that story, he never had told it before. And I can see why.
Even though we have so many interviews from so many people, John himself rarely gave interviews. But
right.
Luckily, you do have one.
Yes, I do. We're going to get back to more stories. But yeah, this is, I thought our listeners would like to hear this. This is from one of those rare interviews. Like you said, he didn't give too many of them. This one was back in 1970 when the prestigious British music publication Melody Maker, which I guess is equivalent to Billboard magazine over here, they named Led Zeppelin the top rock group after an 8-year reign by the Beatles. And John was asked to compare Zeppelin and the Beatles.
Good evening. Tonight, a musical surprise as the Beatles topple.
It's cool. It's groovy. It's number one, the Led Zeppelin.
The Led what?
The Led Zeppelin, but I'm afraid that you and other dads like you may never have heard of them. But this British group has made musical history today. Readers of the Melody Maker have voted them the top world group. The significance is that the Beatles have held this title for 8 years. But now, the Beatles are out. 8 years ago, the Beatles were four clean-cut and clean-shaven young men who had a happy knack for songwriting. The tunes they wrote and sang were evergreens, as hummable and as immortal as I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas and Autumn Leaves. But a new generation was growing up. A generation to whom Bing Crosby and the Ink Spots meant nothing. A generation that demanded a new kind of music. Music like the music of the Led Zeppelin.
The Beatles ran for 8 years, and when one thinks of a song of theirs, Yesterday, which had all sorts of variations played upon it, do you think as musicians you'll be able to last as long as 8 years? Do you think you'll be inventive enough? You know, the old thing about being able to whistle the tune, being able to hum the tune as you go away. I don't think I could hum any of your stuff.
No, but I think it's changing. That's the main thing, you see. I think that's why the awards have changed, because the kids are changing for a start. And so is the music changing. I think there's already a single out of Whole Lot of Love, an orchestra playing it, which is quite interesting, really. The flute plays what the lead vocal would do.
So you're saying that your fans don't necessarily want to whistle the tunes, to hum the tune. But they're much more sophisticated than, you know, my generation.
I think, not in that sense. I think these days that let's say the public, you know, it's not just say the kids, because we've had sort of all sorts of people at concerts, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that they're coming to listen to what you're playing and not just to look at you and see what you are. I mean, I remember when I was, let's go back a few years, when I first went to see the Beatles, because we've mentioned them a few times, it was to look at them, you know. It wasn't, you didn't really bother what you were listening to.
Yes.
And today, well, it's not what you are, it's what you're playing.
Well, I think most people know about Jason Bonham, John's son, who plays drums for several bands, including Foreigner. That's where I was lucky enough to meet him at the radio station WMGK. They have an annual 4th of July party in Philly. And someone said to me, do you know who's playing drums? I said, who? He's really good. And he said, yeah, that's that's Jason Bonham. And I was like, wow, starstruck. So I have a cute picture of the two of us, but a nicer guy, right? You just
we'll put it on our website, so nice. And they can see it. All right.
He was just so nice. But I don't know if a lot of people know that John also had a daughter, and her name is Zoe. Right. And he has a sister named Debbie. And Zoe and Debbie perform Led Zeppelin songs, and they're all over Facebook. And Zoe plays a mean harmonica. It's amazing to watch. She's very pretty, and it's just interesting. I just wonder what John would have thought, you know.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about Jason, obviously I pulled up a bit, and this is a great story. He talks about as he was growing up, you know, his father would wake him up in the middle of the night, and when he'd have people over, say, hey, Jason, come on down, play drums. And, you know, anyway, he'll tell you, here it is.
I started to play drums from about the age 4 or 5. I actually don't remember being taught, but it was kind of, I've watched old movie footage of where I'm playing as a child. Mainly I used to play along to like jukebox. My dad would program it, and generally I've spoken about before is I'd be woken up in the middle of the night, you know, dad would come and wake me up and say, oh, come and play drums for my friends. And I'd come downstairs in my pajamas and he'd put the jukebox on. I'd play like All Right Now or something from Bad Company and Free and or the Stones. And he was just very proud. So that was kind of my, you know, there's the kind of the parties and musicians didn't really know anything different.
So speaking of Yes, they were label mates with Zep. Yeah. They were both on Atlantic Records. You spoke with Chris Squire. When and where did this happen?
Well, I actually know Chris pretty well. I've known him for like 40 years. And I was actually an usher at his second wedding. I think he was up to 3 before he passed. Anyway, one of the greatest, I think one of the greatest, if not the greatest bass player, but a story for another day and another time. Anyway, when I saw Chris, I think it was if you don't know this, when they did the reunion concert at the O2 Arena in 2007, that was the Zeppelin where they got back together and recorded Celebration Day. There were other acts on the bill that were sort of acting as the opening acts, and they wanted to get people that had been on the Atlantic roster. So two of the longest running bands were Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Yes, and they were all label mates of Zeppelin, and they were arguably the biggest bands on the label. So for the opening to Zeppelin, Chris said he got a call, and they asked him if he would play bass with Keith Emerson, who was going to play keys, obviously, and they were going to do a version of Fanfare for the Common Man. And Chris got Alan White, the drummer from Yes, and also Simon Kirk, our old buddy there from Bad Company. And the four of them did a version of Fanfare for the Common Man. So I figured, you know, well, Chris had a pretty good bird's eye view of the show, so he would have some good comments. So we talked about the show, and we talked about, because he knows Jason, since he was a kid, we talked about that. So I thought these stories would be rather appropriate. Here's Chris.
Whoa, he was extraordinarily good. I mean, the Zeppelin thing was stemmed from the power of the drums, and then, you know, they hung the hooks of the guitars and the keyboards around the power of the drums, really. And of course, Robert's great rock and roll singing as well. But yeah, John Bonham was very important to that band. Jason now is accomplished enough to follow in his father's footsteps.
Well, Chris Squire has known Jason Bonham since he was a little kid, and Chris saw Jason the first time he filled in for his father when Yes and Zeppelin played at the Atlantic Records 40th anniversary concert in 1988. Gosh, I wish I'd been there. Yeah. And you talked to him about it.
Yeah, I did. And that was the first time that Zeppelin got together with Jason. Now, the only other time they had gotten together officially was at Live Aid, although I think Jason will tell you that they played at his wedding, but I don't think that counts. Anyway, Live Aid is when they first got together. And then 1988 was the 40th anniversary of Atlantic Records. So that's where this is from.
The last time I'd seen them was at the Atlantic 40th in 1988 at Madison Square Garden, where their performance left a little to be desired. But in all fairness, Jason was 19 years old or something then. It must have been difficult for him to be doing that show in his father's footsteps. But, 20 years later, Jason's become a great drummer. And the whole power of Zeppelin really comes from the drums, actually. And he played magnificently, and the whole band did.
Nice words on Jason Bonham. By the way, Anita, what are your top five Zeppelin songs?
Well, Denny, I just started from the beginning because it's just so, there's so many. So two of mine are from 73, and the other three are from 71. Okay. So the first one, Houses of the Holy. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say that I lost my virginity to this song at least three times.
Okay.
Spiritually, emotionally, and I can't remember the other way. Right. Misty Mountain Hop, a great song about a legalized pot rally. So how can't you love that? Going to California, because that's all I wanted to do. And what a beautiful hallucination that song is.
Right.
Rock and Roll. It's just a great song, Ian Stewart on piano. And this one, I don't know how you're going to feel about it, but I'm pulling this one out because.
Yeah. Okay, I'm ready.
The Crunge.
First time I've heard that on the top five.
Well, but come on. Now, James Brown, Take It to the Bridge. Where's the Confounded Bridge?
All right.
I love The Crunge. So there you go. And now, of course, I'm throwing it to you. I know we're in agreement about the early stuff.
Yeah, I'm partial to the first album because, like I said, I was so blown away when I first heard it. I love every song on there. But if I had to give a top five over the career, I would say Immigrant Song, Ramble On, The Battle of Evermore. Sandy Denny. It's the only time someone other than the band sang on their record.
Well, I think the only other song that is that amazing that features a vocal like that would have to be Mary Clayton and Gimme Shelter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
And then Dazed and Confused, and of course, Kashmir, which is still the ultimate Zeppelin song. Stairway to Heaven is a great song, but it's not to me what
not to pat Zeppelin's about. Each other on the back, but if that was a set list, that'd be one hell of a show.
It would be.
One hell of a show.
It would be.
So, we love the first album, and we also have in common that we both love this guy.
Yeah.
He was, in 1973, he was hired to be Led Zeppelin's publicist. How can you not love Danny Goldberg?
Yeah, it won't ring a bell. You're not supposed to know who he is. He's an industry guy, but you're right. He was a publicist, and then Led Zeppelin liked him so much, they made him vice president of Swan Song Records, and he did that. And so he, one of the few people that got to work on the inside, so you know that his perspective is rather unique. And he later went on to be the president of Mercury Records. He was also one of the founders of Modern Records, which was Stevie Nicks's label. But more importantly, or more notably, he was the manager of Nirvana. And he said that Dave Grohl, obviously, with the Foo Fighters now, and of course, an original member in Nirvana, was such a huge John Bonham fan that it helped Danny with his affiliation with the band. But he tells it. Here it is.
Dave Grohl loves Led Zeppelin, and he loves to hear stories about Led Zeppelin. He just wanted to really hear stories about John Bonham. My relationship with Dave Grohl consisted primarily of trying to think of John Bonham stories to keep him entertained. But, you know, Kurt Cobain was in charge of what Nirvana did. At that time, whenever there were band meetings, Dave Grohl would just say, don't ask me, I'm just a drummer. He'd been a newcomer to the band. I must confess, I had no idea how brilliant he was, that he also was a great singer and a songwriter. In the context of Nirvana, he really was the drummer. But he did love to talk about John Bonham and hear stories about Led Zeppelin. I think to this day, if he could go out with Jimmy and Robert and Jonesy, he would do it in a minute.
You know, Dave Grohl recently admitted, and I saw this in print, so I have to, I didn't hear it come out of his mouth, but I assume it's true. He was so obsessed with John Bonham that he tattooed himself with that triple symbol, with a triple circle emblem.
Right.
And he did it with a sewing needle and some ink. So like he didn't go get a tattoo. He sat up in his room and he did it to himself. I mean, come on.
This guy is totally into that.
Totally obsessed. He's hardcore. And you know, who's not a Nirvana fan? And I think that Danny's book, Serving the Servant.
Yeah, right.
It's a must read. Also his books about, you know, the other one, Bumping into Genius. Yeah, both of those books are great. He jokes that nobody has ever read his books, but that's not true. You and I both have. And I think you would agree that they're a great read. He did everything for the right reasons,
yes,
Danny.
Yes, yeah. And you know what? As long as I had him, I had to ask him some other questions. So I figured this is the one you might want to hear. But before I play that, we were talking about how big a fan Dave Grohl is. And I just want to let you know that when they played Wembley Stadium in 2008, the Foo Fighters, it was their biggest audience to date. I think it was about 80,000 people there. And that's the stadium where they did Live Aid. Also, if you saw the Queen movie, they shot the reenactment of it also there. The Foo Fighters figured they needed to do something to make that night really memorable. That's what Dave Grohl said. So he invited Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones to come up on stage. And Dave played drums, and Foo's drummer Taylor Hawkins took over the vocals. And I think they did Rock and Roll, and we have the tape of the introduction.
We'd like to invite a couple very special guests, Mr. Jimmy Page and Mr. John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin! Welcome to the greatest day of my whole entire life.
That's a Led Zeppelin fan right there. Anyway, as I said, we're going to go back and get another comment from Danny because I was asking him, was he surprised that the band didn't continue after Bonham passed? And this is what he said.
Robert Plant and John Bonham were very old friends. They came from the same town or the same region of England. And Robert had been through a lot. I think one of his sons died in a tragic illness. The death of Bonham, I think, hit Robert particularly hard. And I was not surprised. I think, again, for example, Keith Moon died young in The Who, and they had another drummer, no problem. And I think Keith Moon was a terrific drummer, but he was not an integral part of the sound of The Who, the way John Bonham was an integral part of the sound of Led Zeppelin. So they certainly could have done it and made it work as a business. But knowing them personally and knowing how close Robert was to Bonzo, I'm not surprised that he didn't want to continue. And I have a feeling he was the one that didn't want to continue. I was not working for Zeppelin anymore when Bonham died. He died about a year after I left working for them. So I wasn't part of those conversations, but I was not surprised to hear it, no.
So speaking of surprises, I was like, wait a minute, that's not Led Zeppelin. Why are we playing Black Sabbath? But apparently there's a connection between Tommy Iommi and John Bonham. I never knew.
Well, yeah, he knew John Bonham well. In fact, Bonham was the best man at Tony's wedding ceremony. And Sabbath hail from the Midlands in England, the same area that John Bonham called home. According to Tony, Bonham would frequently go to Black Sabbath shows and pester their drummer, Bill Ward, to let him, you know, fill in, play drums with the band. And, I'll let Tony tell the story.
Well, yes. I mean, John used to come to the gigs, usually come with me. And he'd always say to Bill, "Bill, can I have a go on the, can I have a go, you know, can I have a play?" And Bill let him play the one time, and John broke his kit, broke his snare, and broke his fitments, and because if John was a heavy player.
No question, John Bonham was a powerhouse drummer. I mean, he was a killer. Set me free, what's up, you babe? Get out my life, what's up, you babe? You really don't want me. You just keep me hanging on. Now, that's the Vanilla Fudge. And the reason we're playing that is on the very first Zeppelin tour, they were the opening act for Vanilla Fudge, who were riding the wave of their big hit there, You Keep Me Hanging On. Lead singer Mark Stein remembers the very first date in Salt Lake City. And he told me that by the second tour they did with Zeppelin, Vanilla Fudge was now the opening act. That's how big and how fast that happened. Anyway, here's Mark.
We were playing a gig, I think it was Albuquerque or the Denver show. And this was the band where Vanilla Fudge was headlining. And this new band, Led Zeppelin, was the first band on the bill. I think Iron Butterfly might have been on that show. Spirit. Okay, but I didn't get to meet any of the guys at that time. But we started doing some shows. I remember it was a brutal weather. It was the worst snowstorm in recent history in the late 60s up in the Portland and Seattle area. And so we were doing one of the Coliseums, and Led Zeppelin were, you know, opening the show for us. So I was in the dressing room, and knock, knock, knock on the door, and this kid, you know, John Bonham, says, "Hey, you think I can come in and meet you guys?" You know, this little innocent-looking kid, you know, and he's walking in, and say, "Yeah, you're in Jimmy Page's new band, Led Zeppelin. Great. Yeah, come on in, man. Pleased to meet you." So a couple of the guys from, you know, Jimmy Page comes walking in, we're hanging out, and say, "Boy, you know, we really love you guys. We listen to your records in England all the time. And, you know, it's just great to be playing on the show with you guys, right?" I said, "Yes." I said, "How to Carmine?" He said, "Can I meet Carmine?" He says, "Oh, man, yeah. Carmine, come here. You know, here's John Bonham, drummer in Led Zeppelin." So they started talking, and they developed a really great relationship, you know, over the years. I think Carmine got him his first endorsement with Ludwig Drums at the time, too. But they were just a bunch of, you know, just young kids. They were just wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, innocent, beautiful guys, and we got on great together, and I thought, they were just an amazing band, and the people started taking to them right away, so we just started playing a bunch of shows together, and it was a really great marriage.
Carmine Appice is Vanilla Fudge's drummer, and he was a big influence, as you heard, on Bonham, and remembers meeting him on the debut tour.
We took a new band on tour with us. His name was Led Zeppelin. I met this new guy, this drummer, John Bonham. Nobody ever heard of him. You know, I heard of him because we had the album before anybody else, so we listened to it. You know, when in those days, if somebody wanted to tour with you, you got a hold of their album. If you liked it, you could let them do it. If you didn't like it, they wouldn't, you know, they can't do it. We loved their album. I loved what he did. And when I met him, he was green. Yeah, nobody ever saw him, you know. John Bonham was, you know, totally unknown. And the album wasn't even out yet when we met him, and they did the first gig with us. And I found out a couple of years ago that we actually paid half the fee. They got $1,500 for the first gig they ever did in America, and we paid, Vanilla Fudge paid $750 of it. That's pretty funny, right? When I met John, he was totally unknown, and he had told me that, you know, I was one of his influences. Idol influences like, you know, Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, me, and, you know, a few other people, Bernard Purdy, and that. I said, "Oh, thank you," you know. And again, you got to understand, nobody ever heard of this guy, you know. And I told him I loved his bass drum. I loved the bass drum thing he did. And he told me that he got it for me, and I said, "No, I don't do that." And he actually pointed out to me on a Vanilla Fudge album where I did do it once. You know, I did it like a dot, do-da-dot, 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 you know, quarter notes on the snare and the triplet on the bass drum. And I just played it. I didn't even know what I was doing, probably. I went back and listened, and it was there. I said, "Wow." And I went back to him. I said, "You're right, it was there." He goes, "Yeah, I took that and I made it into my own thing." And I said, "Well, I love that thing." Then when he saw my big blonde maple drums, that was it. He flipped out. He said, can you think you could hook me up with Ludwig to get a kit like that? I said, well, I'll see what we can do. I remember calling Ludwig saying, this new guy, John Bonham, his group Led Zeppelin, I think they're going to be big. Understatement of four decades? Yes. Got John the same exact kit as mine, double bass drum even. And he did play that double bass drum kit in 1969 when we toured together for the whole summer. After that, Robert and Jimmy told him it was too much and they got rid of the one bass drum. When they did that, that's what became the Led Zeppelin drum set, the big 26 bass drum, the big front tom, big toms in the side, the 6.5-inch deep snare, and the gong. Yes, I had the gong also. But he was a great guy, and I loved him. And he was a great dude, and as we know, went on to become, fantastic.
Now, here's an interesting story, Anita, and you know this guy. It's from Larry Magid, one of the biggest concert promoters in America, and the co-promoter of Live Aid, where Zeppelin first reformed. So he had a history with the band. Of course, told me the story, which I thought was really interesting, that Zeppelin would do a sound check for like an hour, and then John Bonham. Well, let Larry tell the story.
He did a long sound check. There were drummers that did that, especially if you had a larger than normal set of drums or percussion instruments. He definitely took a lot of time on stage, as did a few others. But yeah, I do recall that took a long time.
Yeah, Danny, Larry Magid was in Philadelphia, what Bill Graham was on the West Coast and what Don Law was in the Northeast, in New England. And those two shows that were scheduled for November 3rd and 4th, you could see why Larry would be so upset.
Yeah, I would think so.
And he's a promoter, so you know how off the handle those guys can fly.
You know, I've been collecting these John Bonham stories for almost 40 years from all sorts of people. And the next one is from Phil Ehart, founding member and drummer for Kansas. And I saw him not too long ago. I think it was about a year and a half ago. And actually, they were touring with Foreigner when I saw him. But he tells me, and by the way, they really did live in Kansas, because he was telling me that he saw Led Zeppelin at Memorial Hall in Kansas City. And he remembers going to the show. And this is why you always need to be your best all the time, because if somebody sees you on any particular day, they're going to think that's what you're like. And just listen to Phil.
I remember Rich Williams and myself and a number of friends piled in his car in Topeka, Kansas, and drove over to Kansas City at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Auditorium and saw Led Zeppelin play there. It was very, very disappointing. Because I guess their gear had just come from Canada, and some of their stuff had gotten stuck in customs. And so John Bonham, rest his soul, decided to get really, really drunk, and he was actually unable to play. He just kind of slumped forward on his drum set through the whole show, and the other three of them did the best they could, but Bonham was gone. I mean, he just sat there and didn't play, and I remember Plant kept hitting on his cymbals, try to pop out of it, come on, and he was just too gone.
Now, I've got some comments from someone who spent a lot of time with Led Zeppelin, and particularly John Bonham, working with him in the studio. And his name is Ron Nevison. Ron's one of the most prolific record producers and engineers. He's worked with The Who. He produced Quadrophenia, actually. Grand Funk, Kiss, Heart, Dave Mason, Bad Company, Thin Lizzy, UFO, Ozzy, all the bands you like, Anita. Anyway, for Zeppelin, he was behind the boards on Physical Graffiti, and he describes how he got the classic drum sound from the place they recorded, Headley Grange. You know that famous When the Levee Breaks drum sound?
They wanted to record at Headley Grange for the drum sound. They loved the drum sound. If you walk into Headley Grange, you walk into this old farmhouse, a nice farmhouse, though, that it had a marble floor, and it had a stairwell that went around three levels or something like that. Like big, I don't think it was rectangle. It wasn't square, but it was a rectangle, but it was probably about 30 by 40, something like that. And the drum kit was put right in the middle of the floor in that room. And that's why they picked Hedley Grange. Now, obviously, if you're using a house to record, you have to bring the recording equipment with you. And in some cases, I mean, you could have just brought a mixer and you could have brought the whole thing. It was easier to bring a truck where the acoustics were good inside the truck for to make sonic choices and everything else. So it was kind of a coincidence that I built Ronnie Lane's Mobile and that they needed to do that pretty much the same year that I built it.
Ron also made a very interesting observation about John Bonham's drumming that I wanted to include. So this is what he has to say on that.
The interesting thing that I got from working with them, especially in the basic tracks, is that, you know, John Bonham really was the first drummer that I ever heard that just played just from the guitar. I mean, he played every guitar lick. And most drummers just play with a bass player and play the rhythm and keep time. But this guy was, and that I think is a signature of Led Zeppelin in my mind. And, you know, I've talked to other guys that work with them, like Eddie Kramer and Andy Johns, and they agree that that was a kind of a unique aspect of working with them.
Producer, engineer Ron Nevison. And by the way, I invited him to come on our show and talk about his entire body of work. And he said he would. So I'm looking forward to that. And as long as we have Ron, I found this great bit from Ann Wilson of Heart. And they're big Zeppelin fans. And remember, they played Stairway to Heaven at the Kennedy Center Honors in front of the band a few years ago.
Yes, Led Zeppelin had a major influence on Heart from the beginning. I think that when John Bonham passed, it was in effect really the end of Zeppelin, because they knew in their very core soul of their band that it would never be Led Zeppelin again without him. He was the Velvet Hammer. He was the heartbeat of that band, except for the one time at the O2 Arena. A few years back, they never replaced him. And I find that really, really admirable that they would remain true and authentic to their original band like that. Led Zeppelin never wanted to become a tribute band to themselves. And that's why, you know, they didn't go out and find a singer to replace Robert Plant when he didn't want to go on tour recently. I mean, they just said, okay, that's good. Let's let it lay. And I think that's really beautiful.
Well, here's another John Bonham story. And this one, Denny, is from your conversation with Stephen Davis, author of one of the best-selling rock biographies of all time. It was published in 1985 called Hammer of the Gods, which obviously is a line from Immigrant Song. Stephen Davis was on tour with Led Zeppelin in 1975, and here's his story.
1975 was a long, grueling tour in one of the coldest winters on record. And so the concerts varied in many ways. In the beginning of the tour, Jimmy was playing with a sprained finger. And so the earliest shows in Chicago and in the Midwest, to be honest, weren't very good. They were less than magic Led Zeppelin shows. And also Robert Plant had the flu. They were traveling with a tour doctor on the plane, and he wasn't able to do much for Robert. Really, with the flu, all you can do is eat chicken soup and wait for it to go away. So there was a whole period in the early part of that tour where Zeppelin was playing really under par. And the one guy who carried the band and who was great every night was the drummer, John Bonham. And kind of all the weight of this tour fell on his shoulders. He had to be great every night, and he pretty much was. And I was very impressed with that.
Well, so far, we've heard from Alex and Eddie Van Halen, Alice Cooper, Chris Squire of Yes, Tony Iommi of Black Sabbath, Simon Kirk of Bad Company, Mark Stein and Carmine Appice from Vanilla Fudge, Jason Bonham. I think it's a pretty good lineup for the show. What do you think, Anita?
Absolutely. And I was really anxious to hear your recollections of when you met the remaining three members of Led Zeppelin. What was that like for you?
I did interview all three of them, but not when they were Led Zeppelin. The first time I interviewed any of them was 1981, or yeah, 81, 82. Robert Plant was getting ready to go out on his first solo tour. It was for a show I was working on called Friday Night Videos. And what was great about the interview was when you get somebody like that who's going out on a first tour, and this was like his first interview in years, you can get away with just about asking him anything because, you know, they're going out on tour. They don't know. They haven't talked to the public in so many years. So you'll hear, you know, that interview on a future show. We're going to hear from the three guys from the band right now that I picked. But Robert Plant, amazing. When he walked into the room, you could feel his presence. It was one of those things. Anyway, I want to play something from each of the guys before we get into our closing. So here they are, John Paul Jones, then you'll hear Jimmy, and then you'll hear Robert.
You know, he was a bass player's dream, really. not only was a drummer, he was a musician as well. You know, there are two can be sometimes different. Having said that, you can say that about any instrument, but he really knew what he was doing and he listened and he had such feel, such a soul. And we just worked really well together. Plus, he was always funny. I mean, he was a very humorous man and a very generous man. And so he used to go crazy. So did we all. But no, he was a joy to be with on stage. It really was. I just loved playing with him.
His imagination on the drums was certainly in the rock and roll field was second to none. I mean, absolutely second to none. The overall swing that he had was just, again, you know, no one's, you know, it's just like, so, you know, you talk about guitarists like Hendrix. Nobody played like Hendrix. Nobody played the drums like John Bonham. And that's all there is to it. His imagination and what he could actually do. I mean, I could present him with a riff and he'd sit on it straight away, you know. Basically, because as the band went on, it became more exciting because you knew you could push these things and everyone would be able to lock in like that, you know. It's fabulous. And, you know, it was great with John because he just knew that there wasn't anything you could throw at him that he wouldn't be able to do and improve on.
I think it really, the whole thing about Zeppelin was it was off the wall. It was crazy. It was one of those one in a million combinations. And really, to repeat it again and again and again, Bonzo was the main part of the band. He was the man who made whatever Page and I wrote basically work. By what he held back, what he didn't do, the tempos that he did. And I don't know. I don't think there's anybody in the world who could actually ever replace him, however noble it might sound saying it. It's a fact.
Well, Denny, it looks like our time is up for this special tribute to Led Zeppelin's powerhouse drummer, John Bonham, on this episode, the first episode of The Rock Podcast.
Now, before we go, I want to play this clip because it's from 2012. And I found it sort of last minute, but I figured I got to throw it in here because, you know, where else would it fit? In 2012, I went to the press conference that was held in New York City when the Led Zeppelin Celebration Day was released. Now, there were many questions about whether or not Led Zeppelin would go on a reunion tour. And I thought, okay, I'm going to ask something different because everybody was asking that. And that's something, of course, we wanted to know. Actually, I figured, you know what? I'll start a good rumor. And I had started this rumor, and it started to circulate to the point where when it came to the press conference, I actually asked them if the rumor was true. Anyway, you'll see what I mean.
How do you feel about getting the Kennedy Center honors, number one? And number two, I'm not going to ask you about the reunion or anything, but there is a rumor that you might do the Super Bowl.
Who said Americans aren't funny?
So I'll be searching the archives and putting some great moments in rock together for the next episode. And if you want to hear about a particular artist, an event in rock history, whatever, if it's in the archives, you'll hear it. Just you know, contact us at therockpodcast.com. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We like to say this is the only podcast that matters. So don't forget to tell your friends if you like what you're hearing. Anita?
Well, anything you want to hear, any show you want to hear, we're open to suggestions. But right now, closing our first ever, I really think that we should give the last word to this guy.
I worked with the speech writers. There's no smooth transition from ballet to Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
You know, we're trying to work the Stairway to Heaven metaphor, and it didn't work. So when Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and John Bonham burst on the musical scene in the late 1960s, the world never saw it coming. There was this singer with a mane like a lion, a voice like a banshee, a guitar prodigy who left people's jaws on the floor, a versatile bassist who was equally at home on the keyboards, a drummer who played like his life depended on him. And when the Brits initially kept their distance, Led Zeppelin grabbed America from the opening chord. We were ready for what Jimmy called songs with a lot of light and shade. It's been said that a generation of young people survived teenage angst with a pair of headphones and a Zeppelin album. And a generation of parents wondered what all that noise was about. But even now, 32 years after John Bonham's passing, and we all, I think, appreciate the fact that the Zeppelin legacy lives on. The last time the band performed together in 2007, perhaps the last time ever, but we don't know, more than 20 million fans from around the world applied for tickets. And what they saw was vintage Zeppelin. No frills, no theatrics, just a few guys who can still make the ladies weak at the knees, and huddled together, following the music. Of course, these guys also redefined the rock and roll lifestyle. We do not have video of this, but there was some hotel rooms trashed and mayhem all around. So it's fitting that we're doing this in a room with windows that are about 3 inches thick. And Secret Service all around. So guys, just settle down. These paintings are valuable. They look very calm now, though, don't they? It is a tribute to you guys. And tonight, we honor Led Zeppelin for making us all feel young and for showing us that some guys who are, you know, not completely youthful can still rock. If it keeps on raining, love is gone.